The entire banking system is bankrupt, period. Okay, and it's only a question of which one goes first and which order will they collapse. They're all bankrupt because they all made exactly the same mistakes. They confuse banking with the casino. All banks are at risk.
Here at Liberty and Finance, we're licensed brokers with Miles Franklin. We are standing by the inventory, ready to make sure you get what you need, even into the wee hours of night and on weekends, because preparedness doesn't stop. Call us 1-888-81-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-815-4237.
Hey everyone, this is Elijah K. Johnson with Liberty and Finance. And back with us today is our good friend Bob Moriarty, Marine Naval Aviator and financial author, and founder of 321energy.com and 321gold.com. Bob, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's always a pleasure, but I think we're going to need to start scheduling this two or three times a day. It's very hard to keep up with all the stuff that's going on.
That's a very good point. We talked about last week how we, you know, we hope we wouldn't have to have you on again this week. But, you know, here we are again. You mentioned a couple weeks ago that the cryptocurrency system could really be the catalyst for the collapse. And then we saw, three bank failures that were, you know, largely related to the tech sector and cryptocurrency sector. And now we're seeing issue with Credit Suisse, which then when we had you on again last week, you mentioned Credit Suisse could collapse the following week. And we've seen huge, huge issues with Credit Suisse. Now First Republic Bank is having issues and getting, you know, extensions of credit from other banks there. So can we get kind of your overall picture right now? What is happening in the banking sector? And then I guess we can go from there.
Okay. I'm going to back way up. Okay. There is $300 trillion in debt in the world. It cannot be paid, period. At some point in time, there has to be some regression to the mean, and you have to go back to financial stability. And we're doing exactly the opposite. Some of the things that the Fed has come out with lately terrify me because I'm staggered. They just dropped a 100-megaton bomb on the world's banking system. So as bad as I said it was going to be a week ago or 2 weeks ago, it's going to be worse. And it all goes back to this debt. And nobody wants to talk about the debt because if you admitted it existed, you'd have to do something about it. So they've cut both legs and both arms off the financial system, and they slapped some Band-Aids on it, asking if you feel better now. It's bad, and it's going to get worse.
Can you expand on that, how this current situation that we're in is really directly tied to the expansion of debt and just the ballooning of debt that we've seen over, you know, the past half a century?
Well, what's happened, you can go back to August 15th of 1971, and that's when Nixon came out with wage and price controls. And everybody's forgotten this because they remember Nixon going off the gold standard, but they forget the whole point of his address was to put on wage and price controls. And he was like Steve Jobs at the end. He said, oh, by the way, and one more thing, we're going to go off the gold standard. So what happened then was the United States went into a period of 50 years where we spent money that we didn't have because we were the world's reserve currency. And then the rest of the world looked at it and said, well, gee, if Americans can print money like drunken sailors, we can do the same thing. And that was all well and good. And you had free money for the last 2 or 3 years in Europe, in Japan, in the United States. And you have set up a situation that as soon as you increase interest rates, the value of bonds plummets. And since bonds, in theory, are supposed to be stable and secure, when you've got a 20, 30, 40% drop in bonds in a year, you crater the entire financial system. And here's how to think about it. Pension funds, insurance companies, central banks, individuals, corporations, cryptocurrency, gold, silver. It's like a cheap sweater. And all you have to do is pull one string and the entire system comes apart. And quite bluntly, I was very lucky 2 weeks ago to predict cryptocurrencies would be the catalyst for the collapse. And I was very lucky when I said Credit Suisse was in deep serious trouble. But other people have done the same things. The real key here is you've got this giant financial system that's all intertwined, and it's coming unglued. Now, let me give you some numbers that are truly terrifying. If you go back to 2008, Lehman Brothers was $600 billion. The CDO market was $400 billion. In 2022, the crypto market actually got up to $3.2 trillion. It's back to $1 trillion now, but $2.2 trillion disappeared, went to money heaven. The CLO market today is $1.2 trillion. Derivatives are about $400 billion, but the real danger is in the off-the-books derivatives, and that's probably a quadrillion or $2 quadrillion. Now, on Friday, and I was being a little bit facetious when I said we're gonna need to start talking 2 or 3 times today. Friday afternoon, the Wall Street Journal announced that 186 banks are at similar risk as SVB, 186 banks. So if you got under $250,000 in those 186 banks, the Fed says we're going to insure it. If it's over $250,000, the Fed's not going to insure it. Well, that's going to cause a run on the bank on 186 banks. And the analogy of pulling a thread and having a cheap sweater fall apart is very valid. So we should address the derivatives. Do you have a firm understanding of entropy?
My understanding is pretty preliminary, but essentially that there's more ways that things can be disordered than orderly. So over time, things tend towards disorder.
Yeah, that's very good. Over time, disorder tends to increase. The trajectory and speed of a bullet is very predictable when it leaves the barrel, but 1,000 meters out, it becomes very unpredictable. Over time, everything becomes more chaotic. When you have hundreds of trillions of dollars in derivatives and potentially quadrillions of dollars in derivatives, there is the normal market risk. And few people understand this, but most derivatives are actually interest rate derivatives. 2/3 of all derivatives are interest rates. They're bets on floating rates or fixed rates or percentages. And the scary thing there is when you increase interest rates at the fastest rate in history, somebody is getting hurt big time. And that introduces something other than market risk. I'm going to give you a theoretical situation. I'm very negative on the stock market. I think the stock market, the S&P, is going to go down 2,000 points tomorrow. So I buy 100 puts at $100 a piece. The stock market opens up and it goes down 2,000 points. How much money do I make? You don't make anything. Because you have just introduced counterparty risk, okay? If you buy calls on gold at 1990 and gold goes to $5,000 tomorrow, you don't make any money. Because the guy who sold the call just went bankrupt. You've introduced counterparty risk because of the size of the bet. The numbers coming out of the Fed are truly terrifying because I think they started off with, well, this is going to be a $200 billion program, and then it was going to be a $500 billion program. And then on the 15th, J.P. Morgan said the loans would be $2 trillion, and I'm now hearing $30 trillion. We have just introduced counterparty risk into it, and it's no longer a market bet. It's a counterparty risk bet. And the counterparty to a quadrillion of derivatives means the entire financial system is bankrupt and it has to collapse. And that would actually be a really good thing. I mean, I hate to sound totally negative. The banking system collapsed. It started in May of 1931 in Austria, and it ended in the United States in March of 1933, when Roosevelt was brought into office. The very first thing he did was shut down the banking system for 4 days. When they reopened, a third to a half of the banks never opened their doors again. People lost lots and lots and lots of money. But Roosevelt went to Congress and said, hey, you need to make sure this doesn't happen. So Congress passed a law, and it's called the Glass-Steagall Act. And that act says you've got to separate banks into two parties. One is banks operating as banks, giving loans and taking deposits. And the other is casino with a nail parlor and tattoo parlor, and they said, okay, you can't do that anymore. So that was in effect, I think, until Clinton was in office, and then it was repealed. The problem with the banking system in the United States today is it's nothing but a casino, and it's bankrupt. But the scary thing is, because of the increase in interest rates, pension funds are bankrupt. Insurance companies are bankrupt. The entire European banking system is actually in far worse shape than the United States is. So the probability of a cascading series of defaults is exceptionally high. I just don't see how they can contain it. The numbers are just absolutely too big this time. They've blown the system sky high. Gold was up $70 on Friday, and it was up $70 with everybody's a rush to get into real assets. So we're in for interesting times. We need another Glass-Steagall Act, and we need to stop having the banks be casinos, because they've destroyed the world's economy.
We saw Yellen's testimony, and one of the interesting things about that, and we'll put a link in the description of this video here, that essentially, you know, the Fed and the FDIC backstopped Silicon Valley Bank and their depositors, even, you know, over $250,000. And the issue is, with Yellen's testimony now, she was asked, well, what is stopping, you know, people in smaller banks who have more than $250,000 in deposits, just removing them from these smaller banks and moving them to these bigger, you know, too big to fail banks that will, you know, inevitably be backstopped. And that's essentially what's happening right now. And you also sent me an article here by American economist Michael Hudson here. And his point is that, you know, a lot of people are also moving into U.S. treasuries. And what could eventually happen is you're just seeing kind of the government be the one bank, because obviously treasuries are backstopped. They're not going to fail because the government can just print money. So what is your perspective on Yellen's testimony and also this trend, it seems like, of people, wealthier people taking money outside of these regional banks? And it seems like the banking system will just become more consolidated, and you might have, you know, one bank eventually that could be the government, or you have just these couple banks that are, you know, kind of controlling the whole system.
The simple answer is, if you have $300 trillion that cannot be paid back, what possible difference does it make whether it's one central bank or 10,000 banks? The issue is not the number of banks. The issue is the debt that can't get paid. Yellen's testimony was interesting because, boy, there was a representative from Oklahoma who just took her over the coals. And he says, wait a minute. So are you going to assure me that these small regional banks in Oklahoma, that all of the deposits are going to be insured now? Including above 250,000. And she said, no, we'll insure up to 250,000, but not above that. So if you're in a small regional bank in Oklahoma, you better get some money out. Okay. But there's a fatal flaw to that too. Okay. Let's pretend that XYZ Bank in Oklahoma has 10 million depositors and all of them have money under 250,000, and the guy running the place is a drunk and a crackhead, and the bank goes under. How much of those deposits will be covered by the FDIC insurance? And the answer is none, because the FDIC doesn't have the money. So what Janet Yellen has done is started this giant run on the bank, and she has guaranteed hyperinflation. And it gets even worse, okay? You've got 30 banks that are systemically important, and those are basically backstop. And then you've got the six major banks that are too big to fail. Now, have you ever heard of Walter Rinston? Walter Rinston was the chairman of Citicorp, or Citibank, from about 1967, and I think until 1983. And Walter Rinston was very famous for saying, sovereign governments cannot go bankrupt. But if you go back to the 30s, dozens of sovereign nations went bankrupt. Of course sovereign nations can go bankrupt. Mexico's gone bankrupt. Peru's gone bankrupt. Argentina is a serial bankrupt. Greece is a bankrupt. So sovereign nations absolutely can go bankrupt. Now let's go back to, there's one bank. I don't care what the name of the bank is. I don't care if it's a government bank or whether it's JP Morgan. And they go bankrupt. Well, if you believe that banks are too big to fail, what you need to do is go down to a hardware store and buy a big bucket. Take the bucket to the ocean. And when the tide comes in, empty the ocean. And do you know what the conclusion you're going to come to is? You're going to conclude it's too big to bail. So the theory is they keep giving us this feel-good nonsense. Taxpayers aren't going to pay it. And there's no risk here. And everything is going to be just fine. And they're lying through their teeth. I mean, it's like COVID. Everything they said about COVID was a lie. So once they finish with COVID, they start with Ukraine. And everything they say about Ukraine is a lie. And the real key is we're now to the point that we're being lied to about everything. We've got to get away from that. We've got to have people start telling the truth And we've got to address the very real issues. And the real issues with the debt is we're on fiat money currency system, a debt-based currency system that's past its prime. And we need to replace it with something that makes sense. You cannot have an honest economy without honest money. And nobody wants to address that because it means that Congress wouldn't be able to steal.
Now, we have quite a few viewers' questions here. And the first one is from Stefan. He's wanting to know which banks are safer to keep cash in, big banks or regional banks. Your perspective on that? It seems like probably none of them.
The entire banking system is bankrupt, period. Okay, and it's only a question of which one goes first and which order will they collapse. They're all bankrupt because they all made exactly the same mistakes. They confused banking with a casino. When I was a kid, they had something they called banker's hours. And banker's hours were you worked from 9 until 3. It was the most boring job in the entire world, and you took Wednesday off to play golf, okay? Now it's a casino, and all these guys are doing is they're down at the casino tables rolling the dice. And all of the profit is privatized. They get the profit, and when they get the losses, the taxpayers get the losses. Now, that's not an economy. I'm sorry, you've got to go back to honest money, and you've got to stop gambling. So all banks are at risk.
It seems like it's kind of like, well, if hyperinflation is the end game, then it's kind of like asking, well, where's the safest place I can put my worthless dollars or dollars that'll eventually be worthless? The question doesn't even make sense, it seems like.
Well, actually, it makes a lot of sense. Okay. How many times have I said that the purpose of gold is not to make money? The purpose of gold is to insure against financial chaos. And Friday is the best example I could possibly come up with. There was nothing from a rational point of view that made gold more valuable Friday afternoon than it was Friday morning, other than financial chaos.
Now, this viewer, John, is wanting to know kind of the sequence of events you're seeing play out coming forward here. If Credit Suisse goes bankrupt, what are the chain of events next in the financial system? How will the events unfold, and do you have a timeline?
That's really hard to say. That's two questions. One, I don't have a timeline. However, things are happening so rapidly that I think it's going to happen a lot faster than anybody anticipates. I would be extremely surprised if the government doesn't come out and say something this weekend, because the Wall Street Journal waiting till after the close of the market on Friday to throw 186 banks under the bus was a deliberate move. Which comes next? I don't know. I don't think anybody can predict that accurately. I could say all of the paper assets are going to evaporate and the money's going to go to money heaven. But in what sequence, I don't know.
Now, mentioning kind of the value of these paper assets evaporating, one of the big factors here, obviously, was interest rates rising and then the bonds falling for Silicon Valley Bank, the value of it. We have a viewer asking, the bank's losses on bonds are because they're mark to market. Is this necessary for a bank to do? Why could they not just wait until the bonds go to maturity?
It's actually a really good question. When a bank is holding bonds and they need to raise money, they have to mark to market to sell the bonds. The whole theory of Silicon Valley Bank was they would hold the bonds to maturity. And the reason they did that was they didn't want to pay for derivatives to cover the interest rate risk, because that would reduce their profit. So they blew the bank up by being greedy. But basically, the Fed is saying, well, we're going to pretend these bonds that people bought at, say, 145, and they're at 125 now. We're going to pretend that they're still worth 145. A loss is a loss, and you can pretend all you want to, but you can't change the fact that a loss is a loss. The bank speculated. They made bad decisions. They didn't cover their interest rate risk with derivatives, and they went broke.
Cheryl is wanting to know, can you explain the bridge banks the FDIC has created through SVB and Signature to take control of them and pay out the depositors? This last part of the question is kind of about financial advice, which we can't answer personalized financial advice, but we have, I am unsure what to do as I have a CD with one of them.
I believe that someone will take them over. And to the extent that there is no more risk today and perhaps less risk, but if I had a CD in that bank, I would think very seriously about cashing a CD and moving it to something that I felt was more safe.
And speaking of maybe those more safe assets, this viewer wants to know, are there any other places besides precious metals that you would recommend putting your wealth into at this time in order to protect wealth and diversify? Your thoughts on investing in rural land with unknown future tax rates?
I like the idea of rural land. Barb and I bought a small farm here, about 55 acres, and it's some of the best land in the world. And quite bluntly, we never did anything with it because of the laws here. But I think that rural land food is going to be very important in the future. But basically, any real assets, I think, will tend to hold their value. It's the paper assets that are going to disappear. I don't know what the number is. I think it's like 30 or 32% of the U.S. economy is shuffling casino chips. And sorry, but that's not an economy. I think 12% is manufacturing. You got to manufacture something. You got to create value. You got to add value. And shuffling casino chips doesn't add any value. And it ends up being all fraud.
That's a very good point there. And I think the important thing, as we've discussed before, is realizing that, you know, we'll survive this. You know, humanity moves on past this crisis. It's important to take responsibility and prepare as much as we can. What are some last thoughts you'd like to leave with our viewers, kind of what they should be looking at in this tumultuous time, obviously, in the banking system? And the whole financial system seems to be in trouble, with derivatives kind of being the main issue here. But what are some last thoughts you'd like to leave with our viewers?
Well, actually, you're a little bit incorrect there, and I mentioned it before. Japan is functionally bankrupt. Every pension system in the world is functionally bankrupt. The insurance companies are functionally bankrupt, but the most visible is the banks, of course, because most of the rest of it is invisible. This is actually a good thing. People should go read The Fourth Turning, and it was a book written, I think, in 1989, and it predicted exactly what's going on today. We've got to move on the part of the World Economic Forum and the CDC and the UN to totalitarian government and a lack of freedom. And the other alternative is a move to freedom. We are doing things that are utterly insane. And I believe that down the road, people are going to realize when your money is not tied to something real, you have no concept whatsoever of value. I think you can look at this administration. I don't care whether you're a Democrat or a Republican. We've got an administration filled with fools and freaks. We could not get any more insane than we are now. And the good news to that is, once you reach peak insanity, you start becoming more sane. But it's a good time for people to pay attention, take responsibility for themselves, and sit down and think about what's important to them. And quite bluntly, if you don't have fuel in your car and some cash in your pocket right now, You need to wake up and Monday morning, you head down to the bank and head down to the gas station. We're in for a period of insecurity that has not happened in history. This is not 2008. It's not 1929. It's worse. So people are going to have to start taking responsibility. Do you think the government's going to bail you out? Ain't going to happen.
We have a fun question here, maybe ending on a light note here. Bob, when you flew a plane under the Eiffel Tower, what kind of plane was it? And what were you thinking when you decided it?
I was kind of hoping you were going to ask me a question about chickens. I've learned a lot about chickens in the last 2 years, and I could keep you entertained for an hour about how much I screwed up chickens. Every cat and dog in the neighborhood thinks there's a sign outside my door saying KFC freed chicken. When I was 19 years old, I was landing airplanes on an aircraft carrier. And there's four wires, and the distance between wires is about 10 yards. And you want to make sure you caught a wire, because if you didn't catch a wire, you weren't going to stay on the aircraft carrier. Flying under the Eiffel Tower is one of the easiest things to do from a technical point of view. And quite bluntly, it's one of those things I just think needed doing.
Fantastic. Well, Bob, once again, thank you so much for your time. As always, if our viewers would like to learn more, they can go to 321energy.com, 321gold.com, and also we'll put your Amazon author page in the description of this video. Tell us a bit about your books that are available there.
If you read, and a lot of people don't read anymore, there is something. I published 10 different books, and some of them are short fiction that you can read in 2 hours. And quite bluntly, this is not my ego speaking. They're very funny books. And I've got a couple of financial books, and I've got a book about how a gold company starting from scratch, going to production. And I got a book about a memoir of my time in the Marine Corps, my time as a fighter pilot. And the conclusion that I came to is I hate war. It's so stupid. And I wish we would get out of this insanity in Ukraine.
Bob Moriarty, once again, thank you so much for your time, as always, and God bless.
Very good job. I always have fun with you, but we got to do something about the chickens.
Miles Franklin Precious Metals is one of America's oldest and most trusted bullion dealers. Miles Franklin is A-plus rated and accredited by the Better Business Bureau, licensed and bonded, and has zero complaints ever registered. Here at Liberty and Finance, we are licensed brokers with Miles Franklin. To order, simply call us, discuss your needs, and we can let you know our live inventory, prices, and availability, and lock in your order over the phone. Once your order is locked, the price is held for you regardless of market fluctuations, and the metals are reserved for you awaiting your settled payment. Within one business day of ordering, you will receive an email invoice detailing the order and payment instructions. Miles Franklin accepts payments by bank wire, ACH or electronic check, money order, check mailed priority mail, and cryptocurrency. The fastest forms of payment are bank wire and cryptocurrency. Upon settled payment, metals will ship out within 3 to 5 business days. You will receive tracking information via email. Domestic shipping charges are $15 for any order under 500 ounces of silver or 10 ounces of gold. For orders larger than that, domestic shipping is free. The package will be boxed, fully insured, and labeled discreetly, with no indication of the contents inside. For your privacy, the name Miles Franklin will not even be on the package. To talk to myself, Kaiser, my brother Elijah, or my father Dunnigan, call 1-888-81-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-815-4237.